the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Here we are, the first Monday after Thanksgiving. And so I hope each of you had a wonderful Thanksgiving celebration with your families. And, you know, this is just one of those times of the year when all of a sudden the pace just seems to quicken. And, of course, the commercials are out there telling us just how many shopping days are left till Christmas. And I hope that you are maintaining some sanity in the midst of all this. I think that ought to be a real issue of encouragement to each of us, that we maintain our sanity, refuse to join in the frenzy, and with our families and individually really focus on what's important during these days. We're going to continue to talk about the issues of the day on this program, and today we're going to be talking about where the logic of civil unions or domestic partnerships and even same-sex marriage inevitably leads. We're going to be looking at an article from England that is really shocking, but it is a sign of things to come. If we can define marriage as something other than a man and a woman for life, then how can we stop ending what they call discrimination? Why can we just stop with same-sex couples? Why not many other kinds of formulations that would come about? That's the point that was made in the Times of London, and it's worth our discussion today. We're going to get to that in just a moment. First, a number of other issues in the news. Big abortion case to be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. This has to do with a never-enforced New Hampshire law that requires parental notification before a minor has an abortion. And as the Supreme Court hears those oral arguments on Wednesday, the justices will be hearing the court arguments in just about 48 hours. The court is going to be confronting one of the biggest abortion cases of our times because this challenge raises a host of the most important issues that get to the very heart of the controversy over abortion. Under the New Hampshire law, parents or guardians must be notified either in person or by certified mail if a minor child is to have an abortion, unless the girl goes to the court with some exceptional circumstance. Now, Becca Pauling, age 33, who heads Annie's Forum, a weekly program that brings together teenage girls and older women there in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, said, quote, "Women are going to get abortions no matter what. Whether it's legal or illegal, whether they're 13 or whether they're 50, any limitations put on it is heading backward in time." Fascinating argument, isn't it? Any limitation put on abortion is heading backward in time. Any limitation. You know, you just have to hope that these people don't actually mean what they say. But I'm really afraid in this case, almost chillingly afraid, to think that that this woman means exactly what she says. Speaking of chilling news, reports out of the Times of London tell us that a government agency is launching an inquiry into doctors' reports that up to 50 babies a year are born alive after botched abortions by the National Health Service in Great Britain. 50. The investigation is to be undertaken by the Confidential Inquiry into Maternal and Child Health, and it comes amidst what the Times reports as growing unease among clinicians over a legal ambiguity that could see them being charged with infanticide. Now, when you're being told that abortion is now just a routine medical procedure and that it has everything to do about a woman's choice and everything to do about a woman's self-determination, just remember this one statistic from Great Britain. I wish we could know just how many babies are born alive after botched abortions in the United States of America. We don't know. But this factoid, this very, very tragic piece of information from Great Britain reminds us that, of course, there's another life at stake. It's the life of the unborn child. And it is a life that in at least 50 babies a year, according to this report from Britain's most respected newspaper, results in a live birth after an abortion has been attempted. According to one doctor, in this case, Stuart Campbell, former professor of obstetrics and gynecology at St. George's Hospital in London, a number of these babies survive. Quote, "They can be born breathing and crying at 19 weeks gestation. I'm not anti-abortion," he says, "but as far as I'm concerned, this is substandard medicine." That statement in itself is so revealing. He says he's not anti-abortion, but to botch an abortion is substandard medicine. To fail to kill effectively. To kill an unborn baby is substandard medicine. Folks, we're talking about far more damaging, far more tragic, far more dangerous substandard morality here. What does this represent in terms of a culture that will complain about botched abortions? After all, what does that mean? The baby is born alive. If you kill it at that point, you can be charged. It's not a matter of legal ambiguity, as these doctors complain. You can be charged in Great Britain or in the United States of America with murder. That ought to tell you everything you need to know about the moral and legal status of the unborn child. Once it's born, it is deserving of all rights. To kill it would be murder. But up until that point, it's just a woman's choice. That's what we're told. That's what the women have demanded. That's what the Supreme Court decided in Roe v. Wade. Folks, there's so many other things out there in the news. Also, while we're looking at Great Britain, it's interesting to note that a poll taken for BBC News reveals that the vast majority of Britons want a Christian society, but they don't want to go to church. More than two-thirds of the respondents to this major poll indicated that they were Christian, but only 17% regularly attend church services. 75% of respondents said that Great Britain should retain Christian values, whatever they are. Folks, we talk about living on the inheritance of a Christian worldview. We talk about the United States of America living on a declining residue of Christian knowledge. And folks, you can't have a society that is shaped by Christian morality if it doesn't even know what that morality is. And you certainly can't have a nation that considers itself made up of a plurality, a majority of Christians, if those people have no actual ongoing contact with Christianity, the Christian faith, and Christian commitment. A warning not only for Great Britain, but for all of us as well. Speaking of matters related to Christianity, we've been tracing how translations of the Bible are getting looser and looser. We talked about this this hour-long reading of the Bible that that folks have published, and now the Dutch are into it as well. There's a new Dutch translation of the Bible. It is a break with the old Dutch authorized version, a radical break, according to its translators. It is completely modern and colloquial. Language such as thou shalt not steal, and of course this has changed from the Dutch into the English equivalent, has been junked for don't steal. I guess that does make the point, but it lacks a little bit of the poetry. The infant Jesus is now said to be laid in a crate rather than in a manger, and there's just a whole lot going on here. The Catholic Church in the Netherlands has already decreed that the new Bible is, quote, unsuitable for use in the liturgy, and evangelicals have not been too warm to it either. David Gibson, writing in the Wall Street Journal about other translations, talks about how this has gone beyond the mere adoption of colloquial or familiar language, but to changing the meaning of the Bible as well. The Reverend John Henson has published a new edition that he puts forth as the Bible. It's entitled Good as New, A Radical Retelling of the Scriptures. We talked about that edition just a little bit. The whole Bible is now out. And when it gets, for instance, to 1 Corinthians, where Paul suggests that Christians should remain celibate, and if not celibate, should get married, Mr. Henson retranslates that into the fact that Christians should, quote, have a regular partner, end quote, for sex. Folks, that's not a translation. That's a corruption of the text. That isn't at all what the Apostle Paul was talking about. We're leaving here the entire world of translation and the difficult questions that we must all admit will come to anyone who wishes to translate the Bible. We're now into an ideological corruption of the text, turning the text into something it never was. And if there is going to be judgment about the corruption of Scripture, as I am sure there will be, there must certainly be judgment upon those who would corrupt the text to say the opposite of what it means. Have a regular partner for sex. That's about as corrupting of the true biblical message as I can consider. Folks, academic freedom is claimed by so many, and it becomes a license to say just about anything. And at the University of South Florida, a professor by the name of Sami Al-Aryan was terminated, of all things, it's hard to terminate a professor. This professor was terminated for involvement with Hamas and other radical Islamic groups. And, of course, all the professor groups jumped on. The American Association of University Professors brought charges against the University of South Florida based upon this. But now his own attorney in the case, that is Mr. Al-Aryan's own attorney, has admitted that he has been involved with these radical Islamic groups, including Palestinian Islamic Jihad. So what do you do now? In closing arguments in Tampa, Florida last month, his own attorneys felt obliged to acknowledge, quote, that Sami Al-Aryan had an affiliation with the people in Islamic Jihad. There's no question about it, said co-counsel William Moffitt. His client had lied about his involvement with the group for years. The editors of the Weekly Standard ask, quote, does that fall within the ambit of academic freedom, one wonders? Doesn't the AAUP owe the University of South Florida one big apology? Well, of course it does. But I wouldn't stay up late waiting for it. Academic freedom has become corrupted so that it virtually allows professors to do anything and say anything almost anywhere. Just imagine Ward Churchill, the University of Colorado, and all the controversy, even claimed to be a Native American when it turned out that no Native American tribe will claim him, claiming that those who were killed on September 11, 2001 were actually the perpetrators of genocide. Folks, this is the place where we have to bring these issues for Christian consideration, and the truth has to be primary. Academic freedom has its place, but its place and function is not to harbor terrorists and those who would lie under the cloak of academic freedom. We'll be right back. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I don't know Carol Sarler, but I do get her point. She writes in the Times of London concerning the fact that she wants to enter into a civil union with her adult daughter. Now, no kidding. But she has a point we really need to hear. She has a 32-year-old daughter that means a great deal to her. And she says, look, if the lesbians can enter into civil unions, if homosexual men can enter into civil unions and they get all the benefits of marriage, why can't I effectively marry my daughter? And she says this not because she wants anything incestuous or lesbian. She says, as a matter of fact, sex has nothing to do with this at all, excluded from the very consideration. Her concern is economic. She says, look, there are pension benefits that my daughter could receive if she were considered my spouse. There are tax benefits we could receive together if we would be considered a domestic unit. She says, how is it that the homosexuals can have this right to a civil partnership, a domestic union, even same-sex marriage, if that should eventuate, as it appears it well might, and it already has in Massachusetts and elsewhere? How is it that they can have these benefits and I am denied them? She says, if denying them access to these benefits was discrimination, now the discrimination applies to me and to many others. Folks, we've looked at this argument from another angle with Professor Jeffrey Toobin arguing that the logic of the domestic partnerships of civil unions leads inescapably to the legalization of polygamy. Because if the gender is no longer important, if procreation is no longer a part of the picture, then how can we discriminate against those who want more than one spouse? And, of course, now Carol Sarler raises this issue in a new way. I want to quote from her article published just yesterday in the Times of London. She says this, if I were gay, I could pop into a lesbian dive, pick up a cute little chickie, install her in my home, and then, giddy with optimism and desire, trot her off to the register office a month later and make her my civil partner. Romance aside, by doing so, I would be protecting the person I love most from the potential for financial disarray. That, quite sensibly, is a frequently given reason for wanting to do it at all. She goes on and says, we would enjoy the mutual pension rights and tax breaks of a married couple, including the chance to use each other's capital gains tax allowances. Were I to be run over by a bus, if we lived in a council flat, the lucky girl would be allowed, as our wives, to stay in it. If we lived in my privately owned home, she'd also be sitting pretty, totally freed from inheritance tax. She would own every brick of my estate. As it happens, I do live with a cute little chickie, and I've done so for 32 years. She is the person I love most. There is no possibility of that ever changing, yet I cannot protect her at all. Come the killer bus, the rise in home values means that there is no way that she could possibly afford to pay the taxes on my estate. She will be flung out of the only home she has ever known, paying the price for being not my squeeze, but my daughter. She went on and she said, a commitment to a civil partnership is a commitment to a person. The sickness and in health of conventional marriage is not so much a sexual as a moral tie. Where there is a chosen one above all others, a mutually caring unit is established and stability is promoted above caprice. Loneliness is held at bay, isolation is thwarted, and devotion is rewarded. Some sad day, by the simple security of a roof over a deserving head, be it gay, straight, or otherwise. Now, let me just say that I don't buy the first part of her logic. But I do buy the second part. Intellectual honesty is altogether rare in many of these conversations, but we're going to really aim for it here today. I am against the notion from the very beginning that marriage should be anything but the union of a man and a woman for a lifetime period. That's what marriage always has been. That's what the institution of marriage is by God's design. That is the very, as we have argued, molecular unit of civilization itself. That is the very foundation of society. The natural family is based upon heterosexual marriage, which is and ought to be an oxymoron, the only kind of marriage there should be. And it is tied to the functions of marriage, which include the coming together of a man and a woman in a heterosexual union, which has the possibility of procreation and becomes the fundamental unit for raising children and for the very extension of order within the society. And so I'm going to argue against the extension of this kind of civil union legislation of domestic partnership rights to anyone outside that unit of marriage. And I'm going to argue especially against same-sex unions and same-sex marriage. But in this case, let's just go with Carol Sarler's logic here for a moment. If you even for an instant, if you even for one exception argue that the rights of marriage ought to be granted to any other relationship, then how do you stop with a same-sex couple? Like I say, I disagree with the first part of her logic, but the second part of her logic is absolutely, I think, invincible. You can't stop at that. Not if you're saying you're going to end discrimination. She says, look, why should a lesbian be able to go into a lesbian bar and meet a partner and make a commitment to that partner and then get all the benefits after 1 month? All the benefits of marriage, and I am denied them after living for 32 years with my daughter. If that lesbian partner dies, her partner that survives her will receive all the rights of a spouse. But this mother says, if I die, my daughter will be kicked out of our home because she can't possibly afford the taxes. Now, I think Carol Sarler is onto something really big. I'm not sure what her ambition or motivation is. I don't know her. I don't know how serious this proposal is, but I do know how serious her point is. Her logic is invincible. Folks, once marriage is anything other than the union of a man or a woman, it will inevitably become everything else. Or how can it otherwise be? Because if we're going to end discrimination, then, ladies and gentlemen, we've got to end discrimination. And that means you can't discriminate in terms of gender. You can't discriminate in terms of number. You can't discriminate in terms of family relationship. You can't discriminate in terms of duration. You just can't discriminate. You see, this is the real problem. When people say they want to end discrimination, they don't mean all discrimination. They just mean the discrimination that they don't like. And in this case, with those who are pushing for homosexual marriage, you have a very well-organized, hard-driving, very ambitious, 24/7 organized political effort to push civil unions, domestic partnerships, and eventually same-sex marriage. But what comes after that? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's talk this through. Is Carol Sarler's logic not invincible? Is there any way around this logic? How can you say that if marriage isn't any longer just the union of a man or a woman, it can be anything else but not that? How can you simply stop at homosexual couples? I don't believe for a minute that it will stop there for long. As a matter of fact, there are at least two court cases right now being filed in the United States of America in the federal courts arguing for the legalization of polygamy as a constitutional right on the basis of the Lawrence v. Texas decision handed down by the Supreme Court in 2003. Because the logic of that case, as Associate Justice Antonin Scalia recognized, the logic of the Lawrence v. Texas decision was that what people do in their bedroom, basically, is of no concern to the government at all. Well, if that's true for heterosexuals and for homosexuals, then why not for polygamists? For that matter, why not for those who would practice incest? These are hard things even to talk about. But folks, this is where our society is headed. I think we're indebted to Carol Sarler for making this point, whatever her genuine ambition is. I think her logic is invincible. If marriage can mean anything other than the union of a man and a woman, eventually, it means everything other than the union of a man and a woman. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Join the conversation by calling 877-893-TALK. How would you answer this argument? Is there something here we're missing? 877-893-TALK, coast to coast. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about this article. I'm saying, listen, fair is fair. I think Carol Sarler's onto something here. If marriage can mean anything other than the union of a man and a woman, the union of one man and one woman for a lifetime, then if it's redefined to allow for civil unions or domestic partnerships for homosexual couples, much less same-sex marriage, if that logic moves on, then it can mean anything. Carol Sarler says, look, you know, two lesbians can enter into a partnership after living together for only 30 days and get all the benefits of marriage. But she says, look, I'm living with my daughter for 32 years, and if I die, she'll lose everything because she gets none of those protections. If fair is fair, then fair must be fair. And if we're going to end discrimination, she says, we have to end it for everyone, not just for homosexuals. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Cleveland, Ohio, where Daniel's on the line listening on WHK. Daniel, your turn.
Thank you, doctor, for taking my call. The story that you just told, I have a question. Do you think this is an example of evolution? Because to me, evolving means changing. God versus evolution. God sets the standard. Man and the woman is a marriage. Okay?
Yeah.
If you change that, that's an evolution. Evolution, it means changing. I think this is a perfect example of evolution, and that's why it's bad.
Oh, okay. I get your point. Yeah, well, it's an evolution, all right. But let me just take your point a little bit further. It's not an evolution from disorder to order, but rather from order to disorder. And so, you know, I want to take your point and run with it a little bit here, Daniel. It's an example of what we do when sinners take an objective institution like marriage and say, I'm not satisfied with it the way God gave it to us, and so I'm going to redefine it to meet my own lifestyle choices. Appreciate your call. Thanks for listening, Daniel. Let's go to Jennifer, listening on WFIA-FM in Louisville, Kentucky. Jennifer, you're up.
Hello. I was calling. If you're truly going to end discrimination, what would stop someone from marrying someone, something other than a human being? Why couldn't you marry your pet?
Oh, Jennifer, you throw a whole new element into this. Let me just tell you that I think this is how the argument would go. At this point, only human beings are considered to have the rights that are allowable under the Constitution, and animals are not considered to be persons under that definition possessing the same rights. And so we can't own another human being, but we can own an animal. But, Jennifer, something tells me you're up to something sly here, and that is to make the point that, again, if we're moving from order to disorder into an ever deeper level of rebellion against the objective institution of marriage, then virtually anything does become allowable. And of course, bestiality has been in the news lately. And, I mean, just out of the Pacific Northwest, where an awful, awful story came out where bestiality led to death, and it turned out there was no law against it I don't remember if it was Oregon or Washington. I think it was Washington State. And when it was found that it wasn't illegal, a state senator tried to pass a law, and it was ridiculed in the press for having such a hang-up, for thinking that the government should have a law against such a thing. That's the age we're living in. Folks, the number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, when we start raising these issues immediately, those who are arguing for the homosexual agenda come back and say, what you're arguing for is the moral equivalence of homosexuality and bestiality, or for the moral equivalence of a same-sex union over the union of a man with an animal, or whatever the rest. Well, you know, number one, that is not what we're doing. We're arguing about the logic of the situation. But I am going to argue that what both of those relationships and those patterns of sexual activity mean is sin. The Bible condemns them both because at the very least, both fall short of marriage, the union of a man and a woman. They both fall short of God's ideal. You know, the big question here is whether God gets to dictate, God gets to establish as our creator, how sexuality is to be ordered. That's the big issue, isn't it? We claim all these lifestyle choices. We claim our personal autonomy, our right to define ourselves. In fact, in one of these court decisions, Justice Anthony Kennedy threw in this thing that we have a constitutional right to define our own understanding of meaning in the universe, to paraphrase his expression. Well, folks, if you have the right to define your own meaning in the universe, then you can define it however you want. For that matter, you can marry a rock. But you know what? We all really know better. God has planted within us the capacity of conscience that cries out that there is a right and a wrong, there is an ought and there is an ought not. And we know that marriage is defensible not only on all kinds of secular terms, but eventually it comes down to the fact that it was God's gift to us. Every civilization has understood and respected marriage in its own way, or if it has not, it has paid the price for that moral rebellion. And I fear that's where we are headed as well. Join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Close to coast, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about this article published in the Times of London today. It's by Carol Sarler. She argues that if marriage can mean, something other than the union of a man and a woman, it can mean virtually anything. She says, how can you deny these benefits to me and my daughter if you're willing then to give them, willing to extend these benefits to a lesbian or a gay male couple that has been together only 30 days? She said, we've been together 32 years and I can't protect her at all. And she goes on and says, look, given the legal constrictions and regulations here, she said, that a spouse can keep an apartment, but a child cannot. A spouse can inherit an estate without paying onerous taxes, but a child cannot. Where's the fairness in that? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Is she making a valid point here? Or how would you argue to the contrary? She says if we're going to end discrimination, then we have to end all discrimination. I think her logic is invincible. Let's go to Lisa calling from Dalton, Georgia, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Lisa, you're up.
Hi. I'm talking about the marriage as far as giving up all discrimination. I think that the argument that giving up all the discrimination and against any type of marriage, any type of different marriage, is exactly the same argument that abortion rights advocates make whenever there is a law that is proposed to limit any type of abortion, is that if we go to this one thing, then all of these things are going to happen. The absurd is going to happen. We're going to marry sheep, as we just heard a caller say. I think that there are children going to be born of homosexual marriages. We need something. There's not anything in the law right now that protects those children in any way, and we need something to protect those children. What it is, I'm not sure.
Okay, Lisa, let me just ask you. I appreciate your call. So are you saying that you support the idea of civil unions or same-sex marriage?
I support that there needs to be something, some type of mechanism in place that when there is a child produced or involved or what have you, that there be some type of way for that child have rights from both of his parents.
Okay. Well, Lisa, we are having to redefine parent here, aren't we? Because, I mean, you can't have a child who is actually the biological child of a same-sex couple, right?
Well, I can't have a child that's about biological child either, because I can't have children. I'm married, but I can't have children. And I think that saying that because they can't biologically have children isn't necessarily disqualify them as human beings. Who have a relationship and who have children, because there will always be children produced, and we need to provide for those children.
Okay, Lisa, I want to ask you one other question. I appreciate you hanging here with me. The logic that Carol Sarler says here, that she's promoting in this article, is that if you're going to end discrimination against homosexuals by allowing them to have all the benefits of marriage, even though they're not a man and a woman, then how can you not extend that to others, even her example of a mother and a daughter? Why would you stop with homosexuals?
As far as giving rights that are attuned to marriage.
Right.
Well, a mother and a daughter, number one, can't adopt a child together and be that child's parents. They can't procreate. I mean, I know that's an argument that's made. I think that...
Yeah, that is exactly my point. Neither can the same-sex couple.
Things, in my opinion. They're two entirely separate things. You,
okay.
As providing for your daughter, you know, I don't know the laws of England or what have you, but in the United States, you can provide for your child with a will.
Yes, but as you well know, if you've ever been the inheritor, Lisa, you have to pay incredible taxes in order to do that when you have an intergenerational transfer of wealth in an estate like that. And that's exactly what Carol Sarler's point is. You know, this homosexual couple live together for 30 days, get registered, and inherit without paying those taxes. But this other domestic arrangement cannot. Appreciate your point, Lisa. I disagree with where you're going, but I appreciate your call, and you raised some points for us to ponder. I think it is interesting that when you talked about the intergenerational issue here, you went right back to procreation. I think you have to, and that's where I have to go for the whole question of same-sex marriage and all the rest. And I appreciate you helping to make that point. Let's go to Robert calling from Canton, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Robert, it's your turn.
Oh, how you doing, Albert? Hi, God bless you. Good to hear the subject. Just want to briefly just say that that anything that's going to be contrary to God's word is going to be that's contrary to Scripture is going to be wrong anyway. It is unfair. This is just evidence that that marriage is under attack and that the secular world and its rules is taking over. The principle that this country was raised upon. I just want to say that it is unfair. It's just something else that has come up that's unfair and contrary to marriage. I wonder if marriage is going to be sacred in this country in the next 25 years.
Yeah, Robert, I have to wonder if it is now, and I really appreciate the point you're making, and that leads me to go back and say that while we're being honest here, we have to acknowledge that heterosexual couples have done enormous damage to marriage by treating it so lightly. If we had a marriage culture in this country, or for that matter, Robert, I think you'd agree, if we had a marriage culture in the church that understood that marriage is, well, to use a heavy theological term, it's ontologically right. In other words, it's just morally right. Then to do anything that would weaken marriage becomes a form of sin. And that's where our divorce culture that has been so eagerly embraced. I say eagerly, not that the church was glad to see it, but the church has certainly made its peace, by and large, with divorce. And I believe that's an insult to God's word. And so while we're talking about, Carol Sarler's article arguing that if marriage can mean anything other than a heterosexual union, it can mean, well, everything other than a heterosexual union. That's why when I go back, you'll hear almost every time I talk about marriage, I say the union of a man and a woman for a lifetime. Until death, they do part. I think that's what's so very, very important. We have to go back and say, not only must we define what marriage is for homosexuals and for those who would come up with any other kind of arrangement, we have to go back and say to heterosexuals, this is what marriage is, and that's why you are obligated to keep your marriage vows and not to divorce. And even if the secular world gets confused about that, folks, the Christian church must keep its biblical wits. It must live by the word of God. They must understand that we actually lie about the character of God when we lie in making our marriage vows. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back, folks. This has been an interesting discussion, and I hope it is a spark, perhaps a catalyst, for extending this discussion elsewhere. And I would encourage you to talk about this with your family, perhaps at the dinner table. Talk about it with your children, especially older children, because here's one of the big factors we now face. The younger you go in our population, the more likely you are to find an embrace of what is called lifestyle liberalism. The younger you go, the more likely you are to find people, and in this case, among Christians, college students and high school students, who say, look, the sexual choices and lifestyles made by others are no big deal. And even beyond that, they will argue that they are not of public significance. What people do in the privacy of their own homes is simply their deal. Who are we to judge? That's the kind of pattern that you will often see. We have to come back and say, listen, society does judge these things. Inevitably, every society judges these things. It does so by law and it does so by custom. And what you have in calls for civil partnerships, civil unions or domestic partnerships and same-sex marriage is a call not for no marriage morality, but for a radically transformed marriage morality. Because by the establishment of what is and is not recognized as marriage, a society is making moral distinctions. And that's one of the chief functions of the law, to make moral distinctions. And the law teaches what is right and what is good. At least the law is supposed to do that. And by its very pragmatic function, those observing the operation of a society learn what that people, that culture, that society thinks is right and wrong by looking at its customs and laws. And if marriage is redefined in this society, in the United States of America, in our law and in our custom to mean something other than the union of a man and a woman, then those other relationships will be automatically legitimated. And the long-term impact of that is that they will be absolutely normalized. And those who are pushing for same-sex marriage really understand this. As a matter of fact, there are very honest articles you will find, especially by some homosexual activists who are gay men, who will say, look, the point isn't that I want to be married. The point is that this will normalize homosexuality. And they are right. They know what they're talking about there. This is why we have to come back and say, look, there are some things that are just right because they were created this way. There are some things that are, well, I'm going to go back to that word, ontologically right. That means they are right in the very essence of their being. That means they are right because the Creator said this is what marriage is. And that means that we do not have a right to redefine that. I don't think we have a right to redefine what it means to be human. We don't have a right to redefine away the sanctity of life in the womb. We don't have a right to redefine morality in accordance with our own, well, personal preferences or demands. Because these things are right and wrong, not because we decided they were, but because our Creator designed the entire universe with this moral mandate. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.